The Blue Fairy Book by Andrew Lang. Chapter 2. Prince Hyacinth and the Dear Little Princess. This reading by Lucy Burgoyne. Once upon a time there lived a king who was deeply in love with a princess, but she could not marry anyone, because she was under an enchantment. So the king set out to seek a fairy, and asked what he could do to win the princess's love. The fairy said to him, "You know that the princess has a great cat, which she is very fond of. Whoever is clever enough to tread on the cat's tail is the man she is destined to marry." The king said to himself that this would not be very difficult, and he left the fairy, determined to grind the cat's tail to powder rather than not tread on it at all. You may imagine that it was not long before he went to see the princess, and Puss, as usual, marched in before him, arching his back. The king took a long step, and quite thought he had the tail under his foot, but the cat turned round so sharply that he only trod on air. And so it went on for 8 days, till the king began to think that this fatal tail must be full of quicksilver. It was never still for a moment. At last, however, he was lucky enough to come upon Puss fast asleep, and with his tail conveniently spread out. So the king, without losing a moment, set his foot upon it heavily. With one terrific yell, the cat sprung up and instantly changed into a tall man, who, fixing his angry eyes upon the king, said, "You shall marry the princess because you have been able to break the enchantment, but I will have my revenge. You shall have a son, who will never be happy until he finds out that his nose is too long. And if you ever tell anyone what I have just said to you, you shall vanish away instantly, and no one shall ever see you or hear of you again." Though the king was horribly afraid of the enchanter, he could not help laughing at this threat. "If my son has such a long nose as that," he said to himself, "he must always see it or feel it, at least, if he is not blind or without hands." But, as the enchanter had vanished, he did not waste any more time in thinking, but went to seek the princess, who very soon consented to marry him. But after all, they had not been married very long when the king died, and the queen had nothing left to care for but her little son, who was called Hyacinth. The little prince had large blue eyes, the prettiest eyes in the world, and a sweet little mouth. But, alas, his nose was so enormous that it covered half his face. The queen was inconsolable when she saw this great nose, but her ladies assured her that it was not really as large as it looked, that it was a Roman nose, and you had only to open any history to see that every hero has a large nose. The queen, who was devoted to her baby, was pleased with what they told her, and when she looked at Hyacinth again, his nose certainly did not seem to her quite so large. The prince was brought up with great care, and, as soon as he could speak, they told him all sorts of dreadful stories about people who had short noses. No one was allowed to come near him whose nose did not more or less resemble his own. And the courtiers, to get into favour with the queen, took to pulling their babies' noses several times every day to make them grow long. But, do what they would, they were nothing by comparison with the prince's. When he grew sensible, he learned history, and whenever any great prince or beautiful princess was spoken of, his teachers took care to tell him that they had long noses. His room was hung with pictures, all of people with very large noses, and the prince grew up so convinced that a long nose was a great beauty. that he would not on any account have had his own a single inch shorter.
Of your closed up mind, I can hear you stop and say, I don't need nobody for myself, only I must think. But listen here, girl, how can you put me off this way? You must think of me to be a plastic, fantastic, elastic soldier. Mary, quite contrary, how can you put me up this way? I see you now then turning away, and I know not what to say. But what makes you think, girl, that you're so fine as to consider me a plastic, elastic soldier? This is some kind of a game that you play. So you keep it up, girl, and you'll soon find yourself alone.
Thank you everyone for coming to to be a part of filming my new Comanche. This is gonna be the best Comanche we ever make. Okay, now everyone look like you're having fun. Background action
and action, Matt Damon.
Hi, I'm Matt Damon. Me and all my Hollywood friends have a little secret to share.
We love D&D. Are you in?
Okay, that's good, that's good. Now you all play in the pee a little bit. You're laughing, you're having fun. You're splashing the pee on each other. Good, good, you love the pee. Now maybe Matt Damon, you splash a pee on a Reese Witherspoon. And then a Reese, the pee make you so happy that you cry.
I cry?
Yes, a Reese, you're so happy the pee make you cry. And when you cry the pee.
I can't cry pee.
Oh, come on, Reese. You slut yourself out for crypto, now just be a slut for pee pee. Go on, cry, Reese. You're all a bunch of sellouts. Cry for the Comanche. Come on, cry.
Oh, you know. It's a box car train. But it's damn close.
Yeah, I was wondering. Maybe do the hobo thing.
Yeah, totally.
The DPW, though, dangerous people working.
That's basically true.
That's groovy. Look at that train. It's long. A functioning rail. There's so many rails in Boston that don't function, they're just there.
I think she misled me.
Yeah, not on purpose. Maybe her ice pop was laced with something. That is a long ass fucking train.
If this next street is 5, I'm gonna go left.
Alright. Solely.
Solely. I'm gonna go right and then right on Infinity because I don't know how clocks work.
Yeah.
I've been in this city before. Maybe it was in a different place.
You know how to tell time. Don't fuck with me, I know how to tell time.
Say 5. It says 6, then we're going in the right direction, and I don't know how to tell them. Or they... It says 5. Gone.
It says 5.
It's what I thought.
Maybe she said left.
Maybe she didn't. It didn't make any sense.
She was sucking a dosed ice pop and drinking a beer. How reliable would that be?
I was taking sure getting.
She meant well.
She meant well. Or I totally misunderstood her.
That's possible. Dust fish.
In a world where people still think digital watch is such a cool idea.
Alien Love Nest.
Alien Center. Love Nest.
Right. Center camp, 10 o'clock.
Look, the... Are we like... We're like 5, so we're like sort of vaguely driving to the center camp. Super snails in center camp.
What?
Super snails in center camp, so I have to go by that right.
Oh, okay. With the Lyra box.
Lyra box.
There's the man.
Yeah.
Straight ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't
it's up.
It's up, that's what I'm saying.
Down and like fix the neon. Justice. Oh, right, justice. Truth, justice, the American way.
What, we're on the Esplanade.
Yeah.
Okay.
Closer there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I suppose I should probably turn before the Esplanade. Because then my drive will be shorter. I wish I knew the streets. Can you look the map and see what the second street is? I want to do.
Alright, so you're at what? 5:30?
No, I want to know what the second range is. The name of the second ring is
Infant. Esplanade Infant.
So where are? Okay, and Lover is how far out?
Lover is 2 streets from Infant. Oh,
that was nice. The first
is someplace else.
Someplace is us.
Oh. What's Evil Village?
Evil Village is another Seattle group that involves the Church of Mass, among other things.
Oh, are they kind of, like, connected with some place?
I know some people in it.
Okay. So what are we at? 5:30? Okay, so Infant is good. We're now up to Infant, which is good, and we want to turn
left on Infant. Yeah, on Infant.
Yes, left on Infant.
99 was good because I knew all of the things in the order they were.
Yeah. Alternative energy. Okay.
Yeah. But I've done some people in there. I've only exchanged emails with people in there. Actually, that's not true. Weird. I've been in a bar and I was calling Jill.
So glad I've been talking. So fun. Ridiculous to drive
through. 99, I didn't. I mean, I walk a lot. I mean, I walk a couple miles a week. But that was huge.
Yeah.
It really was. I walked like 12 miles a day for like 4 days.
Wow.
Maybe not. I probably walked about 6 miles a day.
So that's, we were at 5, now we're at 5:30. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, so we're going to 3.
So we're heading toward 8:30.
Man, it's a weird thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw the mock-up.
The concept is a little bit more complex this year.
But does that mean you can't climb up on it? Oh,
you can climb up to a certain point, but then you can't go up further unless you pass that initiation thing. The thing that gets the, you know, the thing you lock to the Seven Ages thing.
Oh.
Yeah. There's an additional, like, farther up you can go.
I didn't mock it. I just think it's really tacky to steal somebody else's art.
Art?
I that's, you know, it's
art? What art?
Oh, it's on.
That's cute.
Arf has been doing this passport.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not necessarily stealing, and it's just like a really good idea, and so they're using it. How is it?
No attribution. Something that's been done in Burning Man for the last 3 or 4 years.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. But, I mean, do you think Arf knew about
that's
it?
Peterman.
Who? David Peterman?
Something. And he's got a red meat shirt on.
Right
on. Dan Peterman. Or Dan
Peterman. Professor. Mm-hmm. Okay. Peterman. Oh, wow, I see a trampoline.
It's the only one.
Yeah, oh, wow. Cool. Have we somehow reckoned up with our Eskimo?
No. We just went to the center.
Center camp?
The center of the rain there.
Oh. Rainy Dean?
The road that's the center camp.
Oh, I see. The center camp.
We went up to that and I think we're back on the road.
Cool.
Sure.
Infant rain.
Yes. See? I knew totally where I was going.
You did.
Now it's 6:30 and I love her.
Iraq.
Yeah. 6:30.
Iraq and my land. 6:30.
Anyway, I was listening to NPR the other day, and they were talking about how these like Islamic militants had like killed a guy using like throwing rocks at him, and then he said something about somebody getting assistance, like Palestine getting assistance from Iraq, from Iraq and Iran. This is like Totem's gonna be like here.
Esplanade 6:30.
Esplanade 6:30. So they're like, look for a giant freaking truck.
I see a truck there.
We were 7. And
oh,
so
okay.
It's over there.
I don't see a giant temple.
Good for that. There wasn't a giant temple there.
I know.
There wasn't really anything.
No. It means it's them. Look for the place where the temple is and then you'll find them. It's a possible, it's a candidate.
It's like, just go to the place where the temple is and that's
right, right, right. Eliminate all the temples in the city.
All the temples that are up are not totem.
And if you go to a Moroccan tent and that's up, that might be totem. Might be totem, but unlikely. Right.
It's been 7:30. Okay. This is what we're passing through now is going to be Illumination Village.
Illumination Village in Podesta. That's cool. I don't know what it is, but it's cool.
Oh wow, there's a camp. There's a camp that says weather.
Weather camp?
Weather camp. I'm so glad I'm not involved in up some big humongous thing. I like other people's big humongous things. I'm a fan of other people's big humongous things. I will come and praise your big humongous thing when it is ready.
Entrenching under the asphalt.
Wow.
That's probably a challenge.
Yeah. This is crazy to be here again.
Oh god, is that it?
What?
I just saw this big wooden sculpture that was our structure that was like erected.
What are we at again? B30?
B30 and Esquire.
Okay.
Oh, they were at the Fremont Fair.
Big pregnant lady.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder who it was.
Coming out of a... Oh, that's a take on the Venus de Milo thing.
Maybe it's a different pregnant lady.
Okay, so there's 8:30.
And, fuck, and is that...
Would it be that way?
And there's there no truck? Fucking structure with all the real estate signs on it. That's too funny.
Go to Burning Man to know Seattle people. In the camp of Seattle people.
There's a Chupacabra mobile.
Chupacabra, that?
That, with the Chupacabra on the side.
Oh. First steps on the plan.
One small
we'll be right back. what we get now. When the music's over, well, you wanna go again. Illusions of a party, illusions of a party, yeah. Sorry. Illusions of a party, illusions of a party.
When his 20th birthday was passed, the queen thought it was time that he should be married, so she commanded that the portraits of several princesses should be brought for him to see, and among the others was a picture of the dear little princess. Now, she was the daughter of a great king, and would someday possess several kingdoms herself, but Prince Hyacinth had not a thought to spare for anything of that sort. He was so much struck with her beauty, the princess, whom he thought quite charming, had, however, a little saucy nose, which, in her face, was the prettiest thing possible. But it was a cause of great embarrassment to the courtiers, who had got into such a habit of laughing at little noses that they sometimes found themselves laughing at hers before they had time to think. But this did not do at all before the prince, who quite failed to see the joke, and actually banished two of his courtiers who had dared to mention disrespectfully the dear little princess's tiny nose. The others, taking warning from this, learned to think twice before they spoke, and one even went so far as to tell the prince that, though it was quite true that no man could be worth anything unless he had a long nose, still, a woman's beauty was a different thing, and he knew a learned man who understood Greek, and had read in some old manuscripts that the beautiful Cleopatra herself had a tip-tilted nose. The prince made him a splendid present as a reward for this good news, and at once sent ambassadors to ask the dear little princess in marriage. The king, her father, gave his consent, and Prince Hyacinth, who in his anxiety to see the princess had gone 3 leagues to meet her, was just advancing to kiss her hand when, to the horror of all who stood by, the enchanter appeared as suddenly as a flash of lightning, and, snatching up the dear little princess, whirled her away out of their sight. The prince was left quite unconsolable, and declared that nothing should induce him to go back to his kingdom until he had found her again, and refusing to allow any of his courtiers to follow him, he mounted his horse and rode sadly away, letting the animal choose his own path. So it happened that he came presently to a great plain, across which he rode all day long without seeing a single house, and horse and rider were terribly hungry, when, as the night fell, the prince caught sight of a light which seemed to shine from a cavern. He rode up to it and saw a little old woman who appeared to be at least 100 years old. She put on her spectacles to look at Prince Hyacinth, but it was quite a long time before she could fix them securely because her nose was so very short. The prince and the fairy, for that was who she was, had no longer looked at one another than that they went into fits of laughter and cried at the same moment, "Oh, what a funny nose!" "Not so funny as your own," said Prince Hyacinth to the fairy. "But, madam, I beg you to leave the consideration of our noses, such as they are, and to be good enough to give me something to eat, for I am starving, and so is my poor horse." "With all my heart," said the fairy. "Though your nose is so ridiculous you are, nevertheless, the son of my best friend, I loved your father as if he had been my brother. Now, he had a very handsome nose." "And pray, what does mine lack?" said the prince. "Oh, it doesn't lack anything," replied the fairy. "On the contrary, quite. There is only too much of it. But never mind, one may be a very worthy man, though his nose is too long. I was telling you that I was your father's friend. He often came to see me in the old times. And you must know that I was very pretty in those days. At least, he used to say so. I should like to tell you of a conversation we had the last time I ever saw him." "Indeed," said the prince, "when I have supped, it will give me the greatest pleasure to hear it. But consider, madam, I beg of you, that I have had nothing to eat today." "The poor boy is right," said the fairy. "I was forgetting. Come in, then, and I will give you some supper. And while you are eating, I can tell you my story in a very few words, for I don't like endless tales myself. Too long a tongue is worse than too long a nose."
To hear a sound, I couldn't look into your eyes. Your love would throw me to the ground. Yeah, yeah, the moonlight played on the lonely sea. The still waters rose with an endless sound. The sand was like fire beneath my feet. My mind was being drawn to the lonely ground. Yeah, hold me to touch me in another world. Great despair was gone in a single phrase. Hey, reach out to the world that together had come. The beast on the task of at hand, gliding through the night to touch the ones who escaped through the endless sand. Hey, hold me to touch me in another world. Would be to the goal as a passion breeze. Escape the space if I only would.
I don't particularly like Mark Spitzman, though. I don't think he's a very good singer. All right.
Actually, I think you do already.
Being in government. Yeah, I know, but being in government is all about sort of moderating between forces which are sort of...
Pop that wheelie! Stacy, can you take pictures? I think it's all wound. So, like, I'm thinking six pictures because six is my lucky number. So, let's see. Oh, please.
Okay.
Totally get artsy. I tried to recount as best I could.
Rebecca Wells really doesn't like Al. I'm not going to say she's going to lie. But,
you know,
I could maybe take some guesses.
Hand me stuff and tell me where to put it. I take instructions well.
Yeah.
Well, let's figure it out.
Alright.
Yeah. Oh, here. We're
not going to do it.
Yeah.
This side of the blue line.
Oh, badgers.
This is the
Thank you.
and I remember when I was young that I was so much admired for not being a great chatterer. They used to tell the Queen, my mother, that it was so, for though you see what I am now, I was the daughter of a great king, my father. Your father, I dare say, got something to eat when he was hungry, interrupted the prince. Oh, certainly, answered the fairy, and you also shall have supper directly. I only just wanted to tell you, but I really cannot listen to anything until I have had something to eat, cried the prince, who was getting quite angry. But then, remembering that he had better be polite, as he much needed the fairy's help, he added, I know that in the pleasure of listening to you, I should quite forget my own hunger, but my horse, who cannot hear you, must really be fed. The fairy was very much flattered by this compliment, and said, calling to her servants, You shall not wait another minute, you are so polite, and in spite of the enormous size of your nose, you are really very agreeable. Plague take the old lady, how she does go on about my nose, said the prince to himself. One would almost think that mine had taken all the extra length that hers lacks. If I were not so hungry, I would soon have done with this chatterpie, who thinks she talks very little. How stupid people are not to see their own faults. That comes of being a princess. She has been spoiled by flatterers, who have made her believe that she is quite a moderate talker. Meanwhile, the servants were putting the supper on the table, and the prince was much amused to hear the fairy, who asked them 1,000 questions simply for the pleasure of hearing herself speak. Especially he noticed one maid who, no matter what was being said, always contrived to praise her mistress's wisdom. Well, he thought, as he ate his supper, I'm very glad I came here. This just shows me how sensible I have been in never listening to flatterers. People of that sort praise us to our faces without shame, and hide our faults or change them into virtues. For my part, I never will be taken in by them. I know my own defects, I hope. Poor Prince Hyacinth, he really believed what he said, and hadn't an idea that the people who had praised his nose were laughing at him, just as the fairy's maid was laughing at her, for the prince had seen her laugh slyly when she could do so without the fairy's noticing her. However, he said nothing, and presently, when his hunger began to be appeased, the fairy said, My dear prince, might I beg you to move a little more that way? For your nose casts such a shadow that I really cannot see what I have on my plate. Ah, thanks.
Yeah. Voice Journal, Raymond Sewell Jr., volume 267. It is 12th, 2022, at about, I guess, 4:20 p.m. I'm walking along Derby Road, Milcrest, Massachusetts. I'm walking the opposite way from the way I usually walk because I'm walking to the corner store. It's corner, well, it's down the end of the street and around the corner, but corner store is a nice short way of saying it. Work week's almost over, thank goodness. It seems as though a fellow tech writer is going to be hired full time. His name is Luis Gomez, and he's very qualified and he's very nice, and he impressed all my bosses very much with his background and his interviews. So I think he's gonna find himself employed very shortly, and my boss Dave is going to be talking to Greg very shortly as well, though my other boss Bruce did mention something about bringing him on as a project manager rather than a technical writer, which would not be ideal but would still be a pretty good victory. And I don't know if it would appeal to him. I don't know exactly what it would all add up to. I guess that is to be determined. Dave's a very sharp guy, as is Bruce, but he's done his interview, he's had his impressions, now it's time for Dave's. And So it'll come down to that interview, and since it's a contract role for now, it's not as elaborate a hiring process as for the other fellow. It's Tonight we're going to watch the season finale of a show called Married at First Sight that we've been watching for a few years of late. It's about five couples who go through some kind of selection process and don't meet each other until they lay eyes on each other at the wedding altar, and then they spend 8 weeks deciding if they want to stay married or not. It's a real trashy TV show, but it's so weird that it's hard to really, it's just a weird show. It's a weird show. It's got a big Reddit forum related to it. It entertains Cassie that I watch with her, because I don't watch any of her other reality stuff. She mostly watches reality being home buyer shows. I think she's watched cooking shows in the past too. But, so, yeah. Hence, I'm walking to your cookies. Once that is all said and done, I'm going to be working on my history for the... This will be the fourth night in a row this week in terms of work nights. And I got a good jump on actually writing last night, but then I kind of stalled out because I've gotten to the point where I've established all sorts of context for the poems, the original 36 Tangley poems. Now I've got to read them and get that fingertip familiarity with them again that it's not hard to regain, but I don't want to wing it. I want to make sure that I'm covering this all good. I was also looking at my Mazes and Labyrinths book from originally published in 1922 that was very elaborate about the Isle of Crete and its labyrinth and the many theories about it, many places it might have been located and many things it might have been used for and the many ways it might have been the structure. It might have been deep in a mountain. It might have been a palace. It might have actually been an open-air kind of labyrinth. There's many theories about that. And so I decided, okay, well, this was the source material. This is what I read that got me thinking about the whole thing. So I think I need to look at the source material one more time, and I need to look at my poems one more time, and I think that will all add up to being able to go through the poems in a good fashion. So, it's a beautiful springtime day in mid-May, and lots of people are out, lots of cars, and I'm about to put on my mask to go into the store, so more in a bit. All right, well, I've seen one person with a mask walking around. Others may have them on their person, but nothing visible, so make of that what you will. And yet people are still getting sick. Really sick. Both my bosses put people down to their bones. Both have gotten sick. Really sick. Had to take heavy-duty meds to make their way back. Pandemic's real. Pandemic's still here. But people don't act like it. I couldn't begin to explain what that means. I mean, Trump fucked shit up for a long time, saying it wasn't real. And people who were obsessive followers of his every stupid thing he had to say believed him and got sick. But I swear it's not a ideological thing anymore. It's just a widespread thing. And people have gotten to the point, many of them, where they just don't want to wear masks anymore, don't want to deal with it. And I'd hate to think but it's true that some of them are going to die, or some of them are going to have long-term symptoms. Didn't need to be so. What's worse is the people who get it and they pass it on to others. And even if you wear a mask, you can always have that moment of weakness. Imagine getting it, someone who masks up and has a moment of weakness or just thoughtlessness. You just miss a moment. And you get it from someone who's not masked up for a moment. So you get it and give it. I don't know what the hard part is. It's just a general impatience. And so a pandemic runs on the clock of people who will find something interesting and dramatic and entertaining for a while. And so it's a TV show or a fad or something like that. It's none of those things. It doesn't care who you are, good or bad, kind or cruel. It doesn't care. I suppose it's not like World War II, which is often likened to, because the Nazis were a visible enemy. They were there, shooting guns, dropping bombs, hailing Hitler. It was an enemy that could be seen. It was also something where there was a geography where the battle was taking place, and COVID takes place everywhere. It doesn't take place just in war-torn places or poor places or places of disadvantage. Which you would think, I mean, the AIDS crisis took place primarily among the gay population, also among poor people. So if you weren't there amongst them, and I guess too if you didn't have a good day, random unprotected sex, you're pretty safe. COVID is a threat to one of the most basic functions of humans, which is breathing. Everybody breathes. There's not a single human that can function without breathing. All day, every day. And I'll share it, and yet somehow this threat to all of us, hitting us right where we live in our most basic functions, has not brought people together. It's more driven them apart. Caught up in all the other bullshit. Anyway, more later. It's Friday, May 13th, 2022 at 8:10 p.m. Bungalow C, second floor landing, Bungalow C, attic study, work table, Milford, Massachusetts. Train going by. Well, it looks like I have one new fellow tech writer on my team. His name is Luis Gomez. I'm probably not saying that the best way. I'll ask him and he'll school me on how to teach it. Pronounce it. He lives in Ohio, I think, at least right now. He seems like a super nice guy. he didn't just impress me. He impressed all my bosses. Bosses and quasi-bosses. We interviewed him. He's got good background, technical writing, regulatory stuff. And he's just... I don't know. Like, sometimes people arrive to the right place at the right time and are ready for the opportunity that is presented to them. I had that happen with Ginkgo in October 2020, and it seems like it's happening with Lou, as I think he more familiarly likes to be called, in May 2022. So that's really good news. He flew through his interviews, like just flew through them. And his references checked out, and Darren, the recruiter, made him a verbal offer, and he accepted. So I think it's all good. It's all good, and he seems like a sincerely, down to the bones, nice guy. Very smart, very capable. And just wanting to do good work for a good company. That's honest to goodness the impression it gives, and there's no reason not to go with that. It's like, okay. I don't know what the next steps are. I mean, I know that, like, with most companies, you kind of get hired every other... hiring, and the first day you start kind of works on a cycle, so I don't think he'll be starting Monday, but he might start the following Monday, or he might start 2 weeks from Monday, something like that. But that's good, because that buys some time to, figure out how to train him. I feel like when I'm back on the clock on Monday, what I've got to do is make a list of things that I want him to know and talk with Bruce and Dave, my bosses, about what their priorities for his work are, and just kind of get prepared, because I'm sure as much as we all liked him, we all want him to come on board and feel welcomed and get trained in a way that's coherent and you know, positive, and integrate him into the work. In a good way. I mean, like, not too fast, not too slow. So, there's that. Greg is going to be interviewing with my boss Dave on Thursday, and there seems to be some thinking on Bruce's part that he's going to be some kind of hybrid project manager / technical writer. I don't know how that works. I don't know what that adds up to. I don't know exactly what they're going to offer him. I know that interview with Dave is going to be really critically important, and I'm going to want Greg to put his best foot forward. I'm not going to at this point tell him that it might not be a straight up technical writing job. I think that that's just stepping over the line, because I don't have enough details to know what it is, and so I would just be saying stuff I don't even know myself. What I do know is that their intention is to bring good people on board with long-term futures at the company, and where we start might not be where we end up. I know Greg's ready for a change from where he's at, the company he worked at together under a former name, been there 10 years now, himself, and I
I get the feeling, though he's a really nice guy and not one to complain about anything, really, that he's ready for a change. And it's up to my company to present him with something that he is ready to take. You know, that's what it's got to be. It's got to be a good fit on all sides. They got to offer him good money. And they got to offer him a job he wants to do, and they got to offer him assurance that this is a long-term thing, even though it's not full-time yet, because the company doesn't have an office in the United Kingdom yet. They can't hire someone full-time there who lives there. So that happened on Thursday. Me, myself, I've just been grinding along, working away on short, long-term projects. Some things take an hour's worth of meeting, and some things are much longer term, and I'm always open to something new, and Bruce is always sending me things, sending people to me, essentially saying, it's a documentation thing, talk to Raymond, work with him. He's done that innumerable times, which honest to goodness, I'm fine with. I'm perfectly fine with. You know, it's like, when I was first at PHT, later ERT, later Clario, where Greg is now under that name, early on, not my first boss, but my second was a guy named Kyle Hogan. Real nice guy, real smart, funny. He cussed like a sailor behind closed doors, but not at me. He just tell stories and they'd be full of funny stuff. He said to me, you think like a contractor, and you're not a contractor here, you're full-time. And I want you to think about being full-time here, what that means. I want you to feel encouraged to think about that in that way. And it really helped. It was an expression of faith and affection and respect. It meant a lot. I mean, of all the things I retained over the years that people have said to me, I don't retain too many that like hit the spot then and still hit the spot now. And that's one of them. And I was at Ginkgo on contract. I started at PHT/ERT/Clario full-time. It's just I'd been contracting for quite a while before that, so I came in to the company with the contractor mentality, even though I was hired full-time. With this new or current company, ongoing company, they hired me contractor. They kept me contractor for nearly a year and a half, like a year and 3 months, 15 months. And much of it was going from contract to contract, not knowing it was going to last, hoping, having faith in Bruce that it would, his determination that it would, but it was iffy. But I didn't act like a contractor. I decided that I liked this company, and I was going to act as though I worked there full-time, even though I didn't. And the idea that I would was not something that, from the cards, from the get-go, it wasn't in the cards. Though eventually it came about. So I think I probably still have a contractor mentality there to a degree. Which means that when projects get sent my way, I'm on them. Now part of that is just they're paying me a really good paycheck and they treat me really well, and there's no reason I shouldn't be on things. My whole goal is to build up the presence and awareness of documentation services, I guess you might say there, and I do that by making the experience of someone working with me a good one in every way I can, and that leads to other people hearing tell and doing the same thing and spreading the word and all that kind of thing. It's a slowly evolving thing, but it's certainly evolved from where it started. So I just take on whatever I'm given. I tend to take things on in manageable portions. I've learned to, at times, not volunteer my entire services for something when they're not necessary. And I think that keeps things in range.
swim in the waters of the sea. Run where you've never run, or a mountain man when you are done. Fly through the sky back to me. You want to go, roam through the world deep below, see all the misery and woe, and if you can't find any fun,
let us speak of your father. When I went to his court, he was only a little boy. But that is 40 years ago, and I have been in this desolate place ever since. Tell me what goes on nowadays. Are the ladies as fond of amusement as ever? In my time, one saw them at parties, theatres, balls, and promenades every day. Dear me, what a long nose you have. I cannot get used to it. Really, madam, said the prince, I wish you would leave off mentioning my nose. It cannot matter to you what it is like. I am quite satisfied with it, and have no wish to have it shorter. One must take what is given one. Now you are angry with me, my poor Hyacinth, said the fairy. And I assure you that I didn't mean to vex you. On the contrary, I wished to do you a service. However, though I really cannot help your nose being a shock to me, I will try not to say anything about it. I will even try to think that you have an ordinary nose. To tell the truth, it would make three reasonable ones. The prince, who was no longer hungry, grew so impatient at the fairy's continual remarks about his nose that at last he threw himself upon his horse and rode hastily away. But wherever he came in his journeyings, he thought the people were mad, for they all talked of his nose, and yet he could not bring himself to admit that it was too long. He had been so used all his life to hear it called handsome. The old fairy, who wished to make him happy at last, hit upon a plan. She shut the dear little princess up in a palace of crystal, and put this palace down where the prince would not fail to find it. His joy at seeing the princess again was extreme, and he set to work with all his might to try to break her prison. But in spite of all his efforts, he failed utterly. In despair, he thought at least that he would try to get near enough to speak to the dear little princess, who, on her part, stretched out her hand that he might kiss it, but turn which way he might, he never could raise it to his lips, for his long nose always prevented it. For the first time, he realized how long it really was, and exclaimed, "Well, it must be admitted that my nose is too long." In an instant, the crystal prison flew into a thousand splinters, and the old fairy, taking the dear little princess by the hand, said to the prince, "Now, say if you are not very much obliged to me. Much good it was for me to talk to you about your nose. You would never have found out how extraordinary it was if it hadn't hindered you from doing what you wanted to. You see how self-love keeps us from knowing our own defects of mind and body. Our reason tries in vain to show them to us. We refuse to see them till we find them in the way of our interests." Prince Hyacinth, whose nose was now just like anyone's else, did not fail to profit by the lesson he had received. He married the dear little princess, and they lived happily ever after. Footnote: Le Prince Desire à la Princesse Mignon, par Madame le Prince de Beaumont. End of story.